Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Jay Costa, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Costa, press star 3 at any time in this evening's call on your phone's keypad. We'll get you in line as quickly as possible. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Jay Costa.
Thanks, Hugh, and thank you all of the listeners today and who are participating in our telephone town hall. As I said before, we've had these town hall meetings that to me, it seems to be a better way to communicate with a greater number of individuals from all across our district, stretching from, you know, wards in the city of Pittsburgh, out of the eastern suburbs, and the South Hills. So it presents an opportunity to catch a lot of folks at one time and answer as many questions as we can. So I'm pleased to be able to do that. This will be the last telephone town hall meeting we'll be able to do, probably for at least 3 or 4 months, probably not until sometime in mid-May again, so given some election rules. But at the end of the day, I wanted to make sure we have a good conversation on some of the issues that are pressing here in Harrisburg. I'm here in Harrisburg, as I mentioned. We've begun yesterday our budget hearings on the 2016-2017 budget that Governor Wolf has proposed. As folks know, we are also working to close out our 2015-16 budget. Right now, the governor has signed about 85% of the 15-16 budget. So many of the agencies across Pennsylvania are receiving the resources through House Bill 1460, which passed back at the end of December. And as I said, the school districts and the like are receiving many parts of their resources. The couple of areas where we've not been able to fully fund programs that are under consideration as part of the budget hearings today and yesterday and as we go forward, in the area of education, where the governor cut the budget not line item in half. Same thing with corrections, as well as a number of other line items and some of the human service areas that we're going to continue to push to fight for. But that's what we're having a conversation about today. The budget that was presented to the governor back at the end of December was supposed to be a balanced budget, and it was not. It did not come with the accompanying revenue to meet the needs of that budget. So consequently, the governor was required to make reduction in expenditures in order to try to bring it in somewhat into balance. The Independent Fiscal Office, Pennsylvania's Independent Fiscal Office, has said that the budget that passed by Republican support was one that was $318 million out of balance and consequently needed to be addressed. And he also indicated, the Independent Fiscal Office, that if we do not make any adjustments along those lines, the structural deficit, the structural shortfall for next year, building upon this year's budget for next year, given what are called our cost to carry numbers and our cost drivers, pensions and human service program increases and health care costs, all those type of things, without any additional investments in education or anything else, that would rise to about $1.8 billion, excuse me. So we have a conversation that we have to figure out what direction we're going to go in Pennsylvania. Are we going to manage decline and make significant cuts across the board, significant and deep cuts, or are we going to work to invest in things along those lines that I just talked about? So that's kind of where we're at. What I thought we'd do today is, as we begin a conversation with folks, and folks are lining up and queuing in for questions, we received some email requests about some questions that folks have for us. And the first one deals with, question is from Michelle, and the answer I would give to the question of what is my position on charter schools. Michelle, I can tell you that I think charter schools are here, and they are part of our educational experience for our kids and our families, and that they're not going to be going away. I do believe, however, that we have to address the manner in which they're funded. I believe that we have created a situation where charter schools, and particularly not bricks and mortars, but the cyber schools, in my view, are receiving resources from our school districts, I believe, far in excess of what is necessary to operate a cyber charter schools. So I have a concern about how we fund. I also have a concern about how it is that we determine when schools are doing well, good schools and bad schools. I certainly believe that we should continue to fund charter schools that are doing a good job and our kids are performing well, and that they present, as I mentioned, an alternative to parents who are not happy with their school district, that there's an alternative for them provided that they're doing well and the school is doing well based upon performances, you know, measures. Those that are not doing well need to be looked at, and we need to put into place some accreditation type standards where we could look to accredit the schools similar to what we do with colleges and universities, so that folks know when they look at charter schools, whether it be cyber or bricks and mortar charters, that they're in a position to be able to make a determination what is a good school. Now, we have some good folks in our area. I know that we have Propel, which has a number of schools in our district, I think do a nice job, and there's some in the city of Pittsburgh that are doing well, but there's also some that are not, that we've heard and read about. So I think we have to take a look at them, but at the end of the day, they will continue to be a part of our educational landscape for our families and our kids and our parents to choose from. The other question I have here is that, is there anything I can do to help pass the budget? Well, Michelle, I can tell you that I supported a budget agreement. Folks should understand that at the end of November, myself and Senate Republicans, along with House Democrats and the governor and House Republicans, reached a bipartisan budget agreement that would have addressed what we needed to address for this year, but also for next year as well. We would have been able to address both 15-16 and 16-17's budget. We passed it in the Senate. I think it was 47-3, and it went over to the House, and then the House has not been able to pass it. We also passed the accompanying bills that went along with that agreement, which related to pension reform that I supported, as well as legislation on the modernization of our liquor stores, which I also supported. So the three major pieces that needed to go from the Senate to the House to move the budget process forward, we supported, and we continue to support. I think at the end of the day, what we need to do is folks need to appreciate that, and then legislators need to understand and appreciate that we have, as I mentioned, a pretty significant structural deficit in Pennsylvania that needs to be addressed. We cannot put our head in the sand any longer. The consequences of that is that our bond rating agencies, have reduced our bond rating. That has cost us in excess of $130 million extra in interest costs that we must when we borrow year in, year out. So we're going to continue to work hard. We're here going through the budget stuff the last couple of days, and we'll be here for the next 2 weeks doing that. And that's kind of where things are at along those lines. We'll continue to work to do that. And, you know, again, it's a looking at expenditures and looking at revenue. And we know that we have to look at both of those things and make compromise. And that's what we did already. Now we have one party that's walked away from that compromise, and we have to figure out a way to get them back to the table to do that. The last question is, what is my position on reducing the number of legislators? 2 weeks ago, we passed legislation here in the House that I voted for that would have reduced the size of the House from 203 down to, I believe, 151. And that measure now goes back on, it will be on the ballot, the legislative ballot, not this upcoming year, but it won't be on until 2017 at the earliest, because it's got to go through the constitutional amendment process. So that question will be put on the ballot, but the first part of that process has gone forward, and we've gone through that, and now we have to wait for the next legislative session, which begins on December 1st of this year, to go through that second step of that process, and then it makes its way to the election ballot. So those are questions that we received from Michelle. I want to thank her for emailing those questions to us. And you will open it up to folks who are have questions and who are in the queue now.
We have a lot of folks who want to talk to you, but before we do, just as a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Costa at all this evening, you press *3 on your phone's keypad. We encourage you to do that. We'll get you in the queue and get you on live with Senator Costa as quickly as possible. We're going to go to Dean. Dean, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator.
My
tax dollars are being used by hospitals to build hospitals and facilities in locations where they are not needed, like within a mile or two of another fully functional hospital. What are your plans to address that matter?
Well, I think you're probably referring to what has already taken place in UPMC East and likely also UPMC in Jefferson, their plans to build a hospital very close to Jefferson Hospital. I don't like that plan. I think it doesn't make sense. I think it's putting resources or wasting resources, and I think it's just an inappropriate use of resources and healthcare resources that could be better spent by making improvements elsewhere within the system. They have a mission to be able to provide services in an appropriate and reasonable manner throughout the region to provide health care along those lines, and I believe that this action is predatory and it's not what we should be doing. So what we've done is made that message very clear to folks who are part of this process, and I know that there have been some hearings that one was scheduled. I think, I don't know if it was ever rescheduled, but I know that there's been, I think I would suggest, a delay in moving forward with that. I'm not certain what the status of that is as we speak, but I've made my concerns known to my colleagues who represent those areas that are impacted, and I think that it poses a real challenge to the remaining hospitals, places like McKeesport Hospital, for example. You know, we saw what happened when UPMC East opened up, and it resulted in losing the hospital in Braddock. And I'm worried about if we do something in Jefferson, what happens to McKeesport. That's my concern.
Dean, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Robert in Squirrel Hill. Robert, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thank you very much for taking this question, Senator. I am a big supporter of solar energy and think that the state of Pennsylvania needs to do more to financially support alternative energy. In the past, the state has provided funds for people who wanted to buy solar panels. They were very beneficial. My wife and I took advantage of that. But I understand that money is pretty much gone, and I was wondering if there's any possibility in this contentious legislative environment of finding some financial support for alternative energy, particularly solar panels, in the future.
Robert, I think that's a great question. I would tell you the last 4 years, as you know, we've gotten away from those type of investments. And to me, I think it's been something that's been beneficial to homeowners and businesses alike. And we don't simply have the resources right now to be able to do that. But I can tell you that our folks in the Senate Democratic Caucus have talked about alternative energy as one of the ways in which we can enhance our business opportunities and economic development in our communities. And I know what's been done, particularly with wind, when you see some of the enhancements that are made with wind in terms of investments in the Commonwealth. And again, those type of things are no longer there. So I agree we need to do more of that. And to me, again, it goes back to making investments in our Commonwealth and in our communities to try to grow our communities and provide benefit to folks that is clean energy, which is something we need to continue to try to strive for.
Robert, thank you very much for the question. If you have a question for Senator Costa tonight, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Aaliyah and Rankin. Aaliyah, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello. Good evening, Senator. My question is, did Port Authority lose their money with the agreement of the new budget? Because they're getting ready to have a meeting and talking about raising the bus fare.
No, they did not lose any money. The money that goes, small portion of dollars come from the general fund. It usually comes from the Commonwealth, the liquid fuels funds, I believe, is the source of that, as well as some federal money. So, no, in fact, they're more stable now than they have been for a long time because of the transportation legislation we put into place a few years back. We've added significant dollars. I think what's going on is the Port Authority having a conversation about sort of restructuring their rates as opposed to trying to increase. And I think they're going to try to make it more easy for folks to have one uniform rate as much as possible. But the state budget has very, very little to do, or our impasse has very, very little to do with Port Authority and their rates. That's a decision that the trustees or the board of directors of the authority are looking to simplify, I think, the rate structure.
Aaliyah, thanks very much for your question. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. I encourage you to do so. Senator, we're going to go to back to the callers now. We're going to go to Linda from Penn Hills. Linda, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa. How are you this evening?
I'm well, Linda. How are you doing?
Fine. Listen, I didn't think I was able to get this call in before I had to go to Belcourt, but as a resident of Penn Hills, I'm deeply concerned about the status of the Penn Hills School District with all the negative publicity with our budget for the past couple years, and it just saddens me because I'm a graduate of the Penn Hill School District, and I'm newly retired, and I'm just, you know, I don't want to see my taxes going up like anyone else. And being a resident, a longtime resident, you know, the people that are retired on fixed incomes really can't afford this situation,
right.
And it's not going to attract promising, you know, college graduate family, young families that are, you know, moving to Penn Hills or considering Penn Hills with all this negative publicity. So what's your take on that, Senator?
I think you're right. Anytime you have the type of publicity that Penn Hills School District has experienced over the course of the past year or so, it's really not beneficial to the school district. I've been trying to work with the school district administrators and some of the board members to work to, over the course of the past year, to help solidify or stabilize, I should say, funding streams and things along those lines to get them from point A to point B as we address, you know, the significant structural shortfall that has arisen. You know, the problem with school taxes going up, and not just in Penn Hills but across the Commonwealth, in my view, is directly tied to cuts that have been made in education over the previous 4 years, where we had a different administration in place where education was not a priority. We're fighting for significant investments in education. For example, we tried to drive out almost $500 million in education dollars to our school districts to help alleviate the problem of increases in property taxes, and it was very targeted. It was K-12. A significant portion was going to special education programs. A significant portion was going to early learning programs, which are, to me, the best money we can spend. Dollars into Head Start, and also reimbursement back to our school districts for our charter school expenses, something that the Corbett administration cut out almost 5 years ago that has really been harmful to all of our school districts, particularly those that have a heavy concentration of charter schools in their districts. So what are we trying to do? We're trying to work with the school district to address what their needs are. I understand that just yesterday there was a board meeting that they laid out a plan where a significant number of classes and classrooms were going to be changed or cut. I don't necessarily agree with that's the best approach. I think that it needs to be a balanced approach, that when you're looking to cut costs, that you should not always look to the extracurricular activities or special education classes or other types of classes that are beneficial for the students. In my view, changes and reductions need to come be balanced, not focused on teachers and classroom experiences. It needs to be broad-based. It needs to be all those things. It needs to be from the administration to the classroom or to classes or class sizes and the like to try to achieve what you can as best as you can. It's a very difficult situation, I assure you of that, but a large part of it has been directed and driven by our lack of investment in our schools over the course of the past 4 years. But we're fighting, and that's really at the heart of our fight with our Republican colleagues who don't want to support the governor's proposals, is that we want to make investments in education, as I mentioned, across the board. Other folks necessarily don't. And it's our school districts that need the help, not necessarily all the more affluent ones where our colleagues on the other side of the aisle typically represent.
Linda, thank you very much for your question. Again, if you'd like to speak with Senator Costa tonight, you can ask him a question. You can press *3 on your phone's keypad. So we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Ruth. Ruth, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. My question is, why are the General Assembly members and the governor collecting salaries when there's no budget in the state? I feel that if you would feel the pain that Pennsylvanians feel, perhaps there would be some movement.
Well, Ruth, I can tell you I have not been paid since June 1st of 2015. So I've gone 8 consecutive months without a paycheck, and I'm going to continue to do that. It has been a struggle on my family as well, but nowhere near what other folks are experiencing, I assure you that. But I agree with you that we should not be paid. I've taken that position. My colleague, Senator Jim Brewster, has not received a paycheck since then. Senator Teplitz, Senator Schwenk, who's in Berks County but originally from Pittsburgh, there are a number of us that have chosen not to accept our paychecks, and we haven't done so, as I said, since June 1st. That was the last paycheck that we received. A governor is not, he doesn't take a paycheck, so it doesn't apply to him. He chose when he took office not to accept the paycheck, and what he does is he takes it and he donates it to I think food banks across the region, across the central Pennsylvania region. But you're right, we have to have some pressure, and members need to feel the pain. My colleagues on the other side of the aisle who feel as if they passed the budget that the governor should have signed was sufficient enough for them to collect a paycheck. I don't agree with that, and I haven't done it. So that's kind of where I've been.
Ruth, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. Now we're going to go to David. David, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A question that I had that kind of related to when you were speaking about the issue about the Penn Hills School District and also the schools in general. I wanted to find out what your position is on the broader question of property tax reform in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think it needs to be something that we address. We have to look at modifying our property tax structure. The question becomes, to what degree do we modify it or reform it? Do we completely eliminate property taxes completely? And if we, in my view, I don't know necessarily if that's the best route to go. I do think that we have to begin to focus on working, because my concern about doing it that way is that there's a significant windfall to a certain segment of our population to the detriment of, I think, our middle-class folks, because when we don't have any property tax in place and we tax, for example, we would have to increase the sales tax and we'd have to increase the personal income tax, then at that point I think some groups benefit, and particularly working families and folks that have two incomes coming in, it works to their detriment. I do think we have to take a look at a reasonable way to provide additional assistance to property tax, to homeowners for property tax relief, but as much as possible across the board. Right now, homeowners in various school districts through the gaming money, about $600-some million in gaming relief each year goes out to every single homeowner where it is their primary residence. Every single person gets, as their primary residence, gets property tax relief. It ranges from about $185 to like $350 in some school districts. It just depends on what the school district's economic situation is, the income and the wealth in that particular school district. I think we have to look at that. I think we need to go back. Senate Democrats have proposed providing for $1,900 in relief for residents across the Commonwealth in property tax relief, but we have to be clear. For the state to pick up that tab, it's an $11 billion tab for all property taxes, local and county and school district. So we've been focusing on the school district side of it because that's where the more significant problem rests. So we've been talking about doing something along those lines, but it requires a shift. It's not elimination, it's a shift. And you're shifting it from property taxes to an increase in the personal income tax, as well as an increase in the sales tax, as well as using the gaming dollars. And that's where people get upset. They hear that they're going to property tax relief at the school district level. Let's say it's $1,900 as we proposed, but when they hear that they're going to, their PIT is going to go up by one percentage point, or the sales tax is going to go up by one, that's where they object, and that becomes the problem. So we're struggling with getting folks to appreciate and understand that there has to be a shift or replacement dollars for that. And but I think folks only hear one side of that story, the property tax relief. When they hear the other side of the story, they don't necessarily agree with that part of it. But that's why it's taken some 50 years to have this conversation. If you may remember, we've had at least three voter referendums over the course of the past 40 or 50 years. I think one significant one was in 1988 or 1989, and where this was proposed, eliminating property taxes and replacing it with the personal income tax, was soundly defeated at the ballot box. So we got it's a difficult and complex question. For example, with two income families, while folks want us to eliminate property tax relief, but they fail to realize when they do federal deductions, they lose their real estate property tax exemption with local taxes and the school taxes. So there's pros and cons to that, but also there's folks who want to expand the base of the sales tax, as well as increasing it. There's a lot of things that now would be subject to tax. So it's a very complex and difficult question, but at the end of the day, it's something that's going to continue. I believe, and I think a number of my colleagues believe, and we're going to try to do it over the course of the next several months, provide some modest relief, maybe $2 billion in gross dollars available for property tax relief across the Commonwealth that may triple what the gaming revenue might be, but it's going to require an increase in the PIT and the sales tax to be able to achieve that. And the question is whether folks are going to want to do that.
David, thank you very much for your question. Again, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers now. We're going to go to Andrew. Andrew, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Well, I guess the guy just before me, how are you doing, Senator? You
I'm
must
good.
Answer my question because it was about the property tax and why the school districts from one district to the next district is so much different. It should be a flat, if they're going to do it on property, it should be a flat rate across the board. I mean, if you live in Wilkinsburg, or if you live in Penn Hills, or if you live in Churchill, I mean, the quality of education based on the tax base that each one of these districts have differs. So you're really not getting an equal education, even though the state governs the educational program. It's still not an equal education based on the taxing base and the way they are pay the taxes, I'm sorry, not pay the taxes, but how they tax people and how the schools are funded. So it really does need to be a standard across the state for everybody to get a fair and equal education.
And Andrew, did you have also have a question about the Marcellus tax?
Yeah, and that was the other thing about the Marcellus Shell, I'm sorry. The Marcellus Shell, when are they going to start paying their fair share toward taxes? That everybody else is paying. They're not paying their fair share like everybody else is paying. They're ripping off the system or the, not the economy, but the...
Yeah, you're right, Andrew. I agree with you on both fronts. The latter part of your question about Marcellus, there's no question they need to be part of the solution. We've been pushing that for a long time. I recognize right now that things are tough in that industry, but it's not so much the volume of revenue that we would get right now, but the fact would be that, A, they willingly come and participate and put a funding formula on the table that we would work with them on that, while it may not generate hundreds of millions of dollars today, but as the industry rebounds and the price of gas begins to climb again, because it's at a very low point right now, as it begins to climb again, we would be able to capture the revenue. But most importantly, it sends a signal to the people of Pennsylvania that, you know what, we recognize there's issues in Pennsylvania. We recognize we need to be part of the solution, and we're going to be part of the solution. Here's a formula we're going to put into place working with you, legislature, and make sure it gets done. That's what we should be doing. They should be stepping up and being part of the solution, and they're not. First part is, you're right, as much as we can do to help stabilize property tax relief back into the communities, we should do that. That's the way we structure our property tax and rate rebate program in Pennsylvania, where we drive out, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars almost to our seniors across Pennsylvania, and different numbers given the amount of the income that they have. So that's what we look at, the level of revenue that or income that a senior citizen would have or someone who's disabled, and then we provide property tax relief based upon that amount of income. So that's the method we have to look at as we go forward.
Andrew, thank you very much for your question. Just as a reminder, you press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers, and if you have a question for Senator Costner, again, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Eric. Eric, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costner.
Hi.
Hello, Eric.
Hi there. Hey, Senator, hi. I appreciate this forum. Thank you very much for offering this up to us. I'm from Wilkinsburg, and I think we've had a great interesting set of questions that I think you got a lot of engaged constituents out there. So I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. I vote in every election, primaries, local, state, national. I go to every single one that I'm eligible for. I will be voting this term for the candidate which does the most to control gun violence. Can you tell us a little bit about what your ideas might be for controlling gun violence here at the local level? Clearly, we're not going to be able to ever do anything at the national level, probably not at the state level. What are the things we can do at the local level to control gun violence?
Well, I think a couple things. I think, first and foremost, I think we have to have a recognition and to our listeners that we have no intent of taking anyone's guns away that lawfully and legally have weapons in their possession or for whatever sports purpose they would utilize them. However, we have to do a better job and doing a couple things, providing resources, for example, to our law enforcement community to allow them to employ some of the techniques that allow them to become better at working to remove weapons from the street. Legislatively, some of the things that I have supported and endorsed over the years have been, for example, things like doing more and holding our dealers and the like more accountable. I'm concerned that we have far too many straw purchaser activities taking place in Pennsylvania, and I think that becomes an issue that we have to address. And I think that's what, so I've supported legislation on that in the past and voted on that in the past. I've also been someone who had a concern about the volume of resources or volume of ammunition and the like and the number of guns that are purchased during the time period. Some members have talked about one gun a month limit. That's something that I've looked at and I think makes a lot of sense. There may be need to do some conversation along the number of that, whether it's one or two or whatever, or whatever reason. So I think that's something that we have to take a look at, the number of weapons you can purchase per month. With respect to some of these magazines that go with some of these weapons, I think we have to look at that and limit the number that we have along those lines. So those are just a couple of things that I think need to be addressed. But in my view, it starts with more resources for our law enforcement community to be able to do what needs to be done. That's our job, to give them the resources to be able to help them do more, making certain that they're able to enforce the laws that are already on the book with respect to, for example, as I mentioned, straw purchasers and illegal possessions and the like.
Eric, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to, before we do that, just as a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, lines are open. You can call in, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers, to Ella. Ella, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Good evening, Senator Acosta. I want to thank you for this discussion. My question is, does Governor Wolf have any plans to build factories in Pennsylvania? And if he does in the near future, and also, does he consider hemp to be refined in Pennsylvania? Because right now I think we're importing it from Canada. Can you give me your remarks?
I think on the latter question, I'm not sure what the governor's position is on that, but I can tell you that my colleague, Senator Judy Schwenk, has introduced legislation addressing the hemp situation. So I know that she supports it, I think a number of my colleagues as well, as an industry here in our Commonwealth. I think at the end of the day, that's something you'll see us starting to talk about as we go forward. I had a chance to visit the farm show about a month or so ago here, the Pennsylvania Farm Show, and there were a couple booths that were demonstrating some of the things that are manufactured through via hemp, and it was very interesting, and I do think that that conversation will continue. With respect to other factories, I think the governor's approach and our approach has been trying to stabilize Pennsylvania's fiscal condition, and a big part of that is our business tax structure, and what we have to try to do is figure out a way to incentivize folks who want to come here and open up shop. To my knowledge, there are no large-scale factories on the horizon, but what we have been focusing on, putting into place programs and the tax structure and incentives through our business tax structure to get businesses and companies to locate here and set up shop. A lot of it is tied to technology, and a lot of it is tied to our eds and meds community, our education and our healthcare community, to be able to get folks to come in and create companies along those lines. I would suggest to you that the days of the large factories that we are accustomed to are pretty much over, but what I think Pennsylvania is well poised to do is be a major player in the development and the growth of entities that are employing folks who are here doing light and medium-sized manufacturing that's related to and sort of indirectly related to what comes out of our health and education network, so to speak. So it all plays together. So we're just going to be a different type of manufacturing, essentially, that you're going to see in Pennsylvania, in my view. And that's what we're trying to focus on, trying to make great incentives for folks to come. And when I say incentives, I don't mean giving them money to come here. I mean making it more appealable to them to want to set up their business here, because we're competing with cities from all over the country to get these type of businesses located here. When you look at what's going on in East Liberty, for example, at Google, and there's plans to have even more Google going on. When you look down in Hazelwood on the El Mono site, you've got the Uber coming to try to put a driverless car there. This type of technology, this type of brain power is creating jobs that pay significant wages, and it's attracting people from all over the world who will come into Pittsburgh, and it's very, very exciting.
Ella, thank you again for your question. If your question is for Senator Acosta, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Robert. Robert, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Hi, Senator Acosta. Thank you very much for holding these forums, and I greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you, Robert.
Hey, I actually have two questions. The first one, which I had noted about, was with the Penn Hill School District and the PlanCon process. Just wondering if there's going to be any accountability to ensure what they stated was going to happen on those forums came to reality, and what kind of responsibility they should have. And the second one is based upon something you stated earlier, that you've been working with the Penn Hill School District. I had sent some information to the superintendent asking if they would consider a discount program for senior citizens. I know Pine Richland just enacted one in 2015, and I believe the Penn Hill School District could enact it simply based upon the Act 77 of the county. I believe the municipality already has a discount for seniors based upon that, so it should be relatively simple to install.
Robert, on that latter question, thank you very much for your kind comments. And, you know, on the latter part of your question about the discount, I know other school districts, Pine Richland is very fortunate. I'm sure they probably have very healthy reserves to be able to offset the loss of revenue coming into the school district. So as much as they want to help seniors be able to do that, I think we may not be in the same position in Penn Hills to be able to do that. And secondly, my guess is the majority, a lot of folks in the Penn Hill, Pine Richland, are not eligible for the property tax and rent rebate program. So sort of maybe difficult for Penn Hills to do that. But it's something we need to certainly continue to look at. With respect to the PlanCon, the governor, the legislation that passed the House, the Republicans sent to the governor, does not plan any money for PlanCon to pay our school districts, so that issue's up in the air. The governor originally wanted to take the PlanCon, the $300-plus million, out of the budget and do some borrowing to pay down the $4 billion for all the PlanCon, regardless of what stage they were, you know, that 12- or 13-step process, pay all those PlanCon debts that are out there, and then use debt service to pay that off each year. But because of the bill that passed, and the major concern that if we would borrow right now, that our borrowing status would basically be junk bond status, because we don't have a budget that's completely, the full budget, that we don't have a very strong bond rating from our bond rating agencies, which drives up our cost to borrow. And the fact of the matter is that that didn't happen. So our school districts ultimately are stuck at this point, making those bond payments that on their projects that without the state reimbursing them. So that conversation will continue over the course of the next several months until we close out 15-16. But I do think that if we get the revenue that we need and the recurring revenue coming into Pennsylvania, that and it allows us to make the investments we want to make, it addresses the PlanCon, it'll stabilize school funding for a number of years going forward. And then we would probably stop from a Commonwealth policy position, probably stop making PlanCon investments going forward and just pay what's in this queue right now, pay that all off, borrow to pay it all off to our school districts, and then move forward.
Robert, thank you very much for your question. Again, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the call. We're going to go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Senator, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing, Elizabeth?
I'm good. I was calling to see that if there could be some more fundings for the schools and stuff so the kids can have, you know, more programs, you know, more things for them to do other than for them to be worried about getting in trouble, you know, so they can do something with themselves, have the girls do things and the guys do something. I think that would be nice.
And I agree. And, you know, and a lot of it centers around extracurricular activities. And what we see taking place across the Commonwealth, a lot of communities or a lot of school districts are cutting those type of programs. And not only that, they're increasing class size. So I agree we have to try to do that. That's what we're fighting for here in Harrisburg. This budget stalemate has been one that has really been focused on education investments, as well as human service investments and job growth and community revitalization. Those are three of the four of the major tenets of what Democrats, along with Governor Wolf, have been talking about. And as I said, we did pass a budget that would have provided nearly $500 million in new revenue to our schools, and we've not been able to bring that to closure, although the Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans both supported that. We just can't get our House Republican colleagues to do the same. And if we do, there'll be smart investments. And I want to be clear that two things have to happen. These investments I talk about in education need to be smart. But we also have to guard against our school districts if we end up doing property tax relief at some point. We have to make sure our school districts are properly utilizing those resources that we send them. But there also, as we do property tax relief, that they still don't drive up property taxes after we provide property tax relief to the residents and the constituents. So we have to put into place better mechanisms to control the increase in costs at our school districts. That's clearly something that has to be coupled with any property tax relief that we do. So we're not going to give reduction on one hand, but then give the ability to continue to raise property taxes on the other hand. But you're right. The idea of making investments to allow kids to have more things to do and create better opportunities and alternatives for them in school is what we need to look at.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Geraldine. Geraldine, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. I just want to tell you I want to thank you for your patience in speaking with me on Sunday morning at the parade. The reason I'm calling you is because I would like to see you get the word out on the silent complaint forms that many, many people do not know about here in the city of Pittsburgh, especially the people in the troubled neighborhoods that are so very frightened about giving our police any information to help them. I've spoken to people, and they are not aware that there is such a thing as a silent complaint form, and I would love to see you see to it that we get those forms out that the people mail do not put their name or address, phone number on, but give the police the information they need for the crimes in our community.
Well, Geraldine, thank you, and thank you for your involvement in that over the many years. And it was a pleasure speaking with you at the parade. It was a great parade, by the way. I hope you agree. It was very, very nice. Squirt Hill, we had a beautiful lunar parade that just thought was very, very nice on a beautiful morning. So thank you for being there, participating, lending support. I recognize that that's an important thing we need to talk about, the silent complaint form, and I will work with you, as I mentioned to you Sunday morning, to figure out how we're going to make it work. So I also will bring it to the attention of Chief McClay and others in the city of Pittsburgh and other communities, not just Pittsburgh, that we can talk about it. So because some of the issues that you addressed, folks' reluctance to talk to police or to communicate when something has happened, this is a mechanism possibly that would help address that. So we're on board, and I'll be reaching out to you to follow up on it.
Geraldine, thank you very much for your question. If you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers, to Ashley. Ashley, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carr.
Good evening, Senator Costa. How are you?
I'm well, Ashley. How are you today?
I'm doing well also. My question is, have you heard of congenital heart defects? And also, have you heard of legislation that has been passed to continue research and to continue help throughout the person's lifetime?
I've heard of it. There's no question I've heard of congenital heart disease and heart failure. But legislation to address it and to provide benefits to folks for it, I've not really seen that or heard that with regard to research. You know, research really comes from a couple of places in this Commonwealth, largely from the federal government, where we have the National Institute of Health provides funding through that agency to various programs and research that's done throughout the country. But also at the Commonwealth here, through our Cure Fund, we do provide resources from the what's called the Tobacco Settlement Fund that allows for resources to be driven out for research along those lines as well. So I would say the research is continuing to address heart disease broadly, but I don't know of any particular program that provides benefits to support folks unless we go through maybe one of the foundations or one of the organizations that address that.
Ashley, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Mike next. Mike, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costley.
Awesome. Thanks for taking my call. Lifelong resident of Pittsburgh and seen it go through a lot of changes, a lot for the good. One thing that really, really bothers me is the graffiti that we're seeing that gets worse and worse in Pittsburgh and the surrounding areas, particularly in Pittsburgh. And my thought is, if you want to attract people or businesses, one of the things that really make an area look undesirable is having this god-awful graffiti that's really making our city less attractive to people. Now, if they could do it in places like New York City, you know, they went through a period where they had really bad graffiti and they cleaned it up. Why can't we do it here in Pittsburgh? And I remember there was somebody that was doing a lot of bad graffiti, and the very first time he went before the judge, the judge told him that he had to take art lessons to really get an appreciation. $600,000 in damage later, and I don't know how many times he went to court, they finally gave him jail time. Now, and we had like a three-man task force here in Pittsburgh to do away with the graffiti, and things really got better. This current administration, I don't know if they have any priority or any sense of urgency on this stuff because it keeps getting worse. I live in a city. I see it every day.
I think it's something we certainly have to address. Oftentimes it comes down to resources to be able to provide the crime prevention tools necessary for our folks to be able to address it. Second part of it is once it does happen, and sometimes it's difficult to see it all happen when it's happening. So we have to have the resources in place and techniques and tools in place to quickly address it so it doesn't become an eyesore. So it's something that needs to be addressed, and we need to figure out what we can do at the state level. We have criminal penalties along those lines for folks who are convicted of that and civil penalties to help us pay for what our costs might be, and we need to do more of that to be able to make it work along those lines. And you're right. You know, we need to, you know, maybe the way we do it is figuring out how to do with murals and things of that nature to do more of that so folks don't have an inclination to want to do some of the other stuff.
Senator, we're going to go through the, we've had some questions submitted online. This first one is from Jeff, and he indicates, here's his question. Families are waiting for relief for their kids. When do you think we'll see medical marijuana passed?
It's a great question. Medical marijuana should have been passed over the course of the past year and a half. I've supported it twice, something that I think is very important, and I do believe that you might see a vote. In my conversations with Leader Dave Reed of the Republicans in the House where the bill's at, he promised me that they were going to do something the first couple of weeks in March, that they were going to address a whole, there's like 175 different amendments that opponents have been put against the bill to try to change it and do different things. So they're going to take a good bit of time to try to remove those amendments that are posed because it does nothing but harm the legislation that we passed. So at the end of the day, I expect that hopefully by the end of March, the House, Leader Reed keeps his word, addresses the amendments, and moves the bill forward and allows the House to vote because the votes are there. The votes are overwhelming. My guess is there's 150, 160 votes for it in the House. And the Senate, it passed overwhelmingly, I think 40-10 in the Senate, and on both occasions, twice. And once the House passes, it'll come back to the Senate. We'll pass it very, very quickly and get it on the governor's desk.
Jeff, thank you very much for your question. Senator, there is another question submitted online. It's from Isley. It's Do you support raising the minimum wage?
I do support raising the minimum wage. We have to have the conversation. Certainly the rates that we, the level we have now is just simply unacceptable. I think we have to do more. The question is, how much do we raise it? You know, folks have talked about $15 an hour. Other folks have said $10.10. Others have said $9-something. I think we have, I mean, I think we have to, my view, we have to work over the course of a couple years to get to $10.10. I think that's a modest, that puts us sort of in line with all of our surrounding states as well. I think a jump from $7.35 to $15 in a short period of time is would be maybe too much of a jump, but at the end of the day, I think that that's where we need to go.
Isley, thank you very much for the question, Senator. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Joyce. Joyce, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. I'm from Mount Oliver, Pittsburgh, and I'm speaking on privatizing liquor stores.
Okay.
I suggest that instead of privatizing, select licenses to beer distributors and bar owners who already have licenses. Why not leave the state stores as they are, the bar and beer licenses as they are, and extend more licenses to private businesses so that all can have a chance to operate in a free enterprise? And if people like state stores, they will continue to support them. And if they don't, they will go to shopping marts or wherever private businesses who have the liquor selling sales, and the weaker will lose and all will prevail.
Well, thank you very much for your call. We actually have passed legislation in the Senate that would modernize our liquor stores, and that's one of the things that it does. It allows the private sector, largely our grocery stores, gives them the ability to sell wine in grocery stores, which they do not have today, and similar way some of them do beer right now. So that, as well as a whole host of other ways in which we can get the product to our consumers in a more efficient and convenient way. For example, direct shipment of wine is another one we talk about. Expanding hours of our existing stores, stores within grocery stores, for example, or other types of stores. All those type of things, I think, will create greater access to folks and allow people the opportunity to invest as part of our system. But at the same time, keeping the existing stores in place, because they do provide a significant level of income for families, the working families, and that's, we don't want to lose that either.
Joyce, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Bob. Bob, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Oh, hi. Good speaking with you. I'm a resident of Wilkins Township, and the connector that was to go from, Turnpike to and provide alternate traffic patterns to downtown airport and south, I guess that's about to be reconsidered, but the new proposal basically is a connector from Monroeville to Jefferson Hills. What is the benefit of that versus the cost? And then actually I had a second question. I'll just ask
okay.
it.
I know that they're looking to pick it up from Jefferson and move it to Monroeville. I think that's the first step, and then ultimately making its way around to the airport, I suspect, in some way. I've not paid that close attention to the latter part. I know that you mentioned Wilkins Township. I know that there was some concern expressed by officials in Wilkins over the years along those lines, but I think it's a multiple-step process, given the resources available. What will not happen is you will not see it from 51 into Oakland into Pittsburgh. That will not happen, and I agree with that because I think we have enough alternative ways to be able to accomplish that. And you have a second question?
Oh, yeah, real quick. The East Hills residents have put up with, 6 to 9 years of parkway construction, but yet one of the worst bridges in the area is on the Parkway East right before the tunnel. Why wasn't it fixed?
You mean the Commercial Street Bridge?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure of its condition, but I do know that I think that's going to be in the plans. I'm not certain. I'm going to speak with District Engineer Cessna to find out the status of that. I don't know if that's the bridge you're talking about, just before you enter the Squirrel Tunnel. That's the Commercial Street Bridge. I'll find out what some of the issues are, what the concerns are, and then take a look at that.
Bob, thanks for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Ray. Ray, go ahead. You're live with Senator Coffin.
I have two questions, if I may. Thank you very much for doing this. First of all, two of the best
best things that ever happened to our economy, I think, are the GI Bill, which gave veterans the opportunity for free college education, and when the state created state-related schools of Pitt and Temple that really reduced educational costs and made it possible for me, among a lot of other people, to get a college education. That, together with the fact that businesses, when looking to locate in this area, are looking at our great universities and colleges, what can be done to reduce the barriers for lower-income people to get into and get a college education? And the second question, okay. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's right, give me the second one.
Second one is, do you think there's a realistic possibility of having a nonpartisan commission appointed for redistricting after the next census?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't necessarily, know how that'll play out. I mean, I think that, we have a new Supreme Court case in place now that I think really has set very stringent limitations on what can be done. I mean, I appealed to the Supreme Court because I saw significant and considerable gerrymandering in the last redistricting. We went to Supreme Court with some other folks and we won, resulted in a lengthy opinion that really gave the framework for how we go about redistricting. So I believe that some of the gerrymandering that was to the detriment, quite frankly, of Democrats this past time would be minimized, greatly minimized, or greatly reduced, and I think that we'll see how that plays out. With respect to education, Pennsylvania higher ed, we need to do more there. We need to do better. We still haven't funded our four state relateds, Pitt, Penn State, Lincoln, and Temple. We have an obligation to get to do more along those lines. It's a function of resources and a commitment from an administration to do more. We had a previous administration that cut higher ed by 19%, and we're still reeling from that. The rates that the governor wants to do this year, that we passed in the Senate back in, I think it was like August or so, or September, we passed the state relateds with a 5% increase. That would have only put them back at like the 1985 rates levels. So we failed miserably in funding education, and consequently the impact has been felt by families that don't have the means to be able to avail themselves to a good education at those institutions. And it used to be that our state system of higher ed was a good bargain for our families and really designed and specifically designed for Pennsylvania students. Even that's becoming more and more problematic for families to be able to achieve. So it is a problem. We have to address it, and it's a function of resources. But I think you have an administration that now understands that that's something we have to do going forward. And our Senate Democratic group has been very, very helpful along those lines, wanting to do more along those lines. We're going to continue to fight for that because, we want these folks, our kids, to stay here. We want to educate them here because you're right. Whenever you look to see some of these new ventures that are coming up and things that are happening in terms of economic development and jobs are being created, they're being created in the areas that require a higher education, and we want to make certain that our kids have the opportunity to do that. And what's happening right now is that folks are coming from all out of town and coming to Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh, and that's great, but we want to keep our own kids here and present our own kids with those opportunities to be able to hold those positions. And consequently, it's going to require more resources.
Senator, we're coming down the home stretch. I know you have some concluding remarks.
Yeah, let me say thank you to everyone. I know there's some more folks on the line to answer questions. We're not going to be able to get to you, and I apologize to you for that, but we've run out of time, a lot of time through this program. And we will get back to you with answers to your questions via letter. So thank you all very much. It's been a pleasure having these conversations. I hope you all enjoy them as much as I do, and we're going to continue to do them unless I get an overwhelming cry not to do it. But I think they're effective and they're helpful, and it's just a great way for us to stay in touch with the folks that we represent in the district. So thank you all very much, and hope you have a wonderful evening, and look forward to touching base with you all again soon.
And again, just as a reminder, if you didn't get a chance to offer a question, please stay on the line, and you'll be able to leave a message, and the senator will get back to you. If you have additional questions and concerns, you can call Senator Costa's office at 412-241-6690 or visit his website at www.senatorcosta.com. Thank you for a good discussion, and have a good evening.